Phone the comment line 1850 715 900.
Okay, welcome back. Well, look, the economy, we're told, is growing and we're hoping that the years of recession are behind us. But unfortunately, we've also seen rising levels of consistent poverty. So what's the reality of living in poverty in modern day Ireland? Well, to try and find out, I'm joined now in studio by Marion Quinn. She's the CEO of Talla West Childhood Development Initiative. By Eoin Riordan, Minister of State of the Department of Justice and Equality, is also here. And in Cork, we're joined by Brendan Dempsey, who's a legendary hard worker with the St. Vincent de Paul there. You're all really welcome. But before we chat, our reporter Paddy O'Gorman spoke to two women about their experiences of trying to live on very tight budgets.
I have three young boys. I was a single mother for 10, maybe 11 years. I brought them up by myself, and at times it was a huge struggle. On my point of view, I've always stayed positive. I've always had family and friends around me, so that's what brought me through it. I just got married in December. I'm in my third year of college and I'm working two jobs at the minute just to keep everything going.
I'm a lone parent. I've been managing on my own for the past 15 years. My eldest is 18, my youngest is 8. It's been hard, and there is time still. It does be hard, but the support of family, friends, and I get there, I get by.
I think sometimes the toughest things is having to say no to the children a lot of the time. It's either you give them everything they want and you're sinking, or you say no and you put the food on the table for them. And that is the choice a lot of the time. The children always got what they needed, but they didn't always get what they wanted. So,
do you agree with that?
It's, I suppose it's school needs as well. You have to get them through school and food on the table, pay the bills.
What's been your experience of trying to get into work and your experience of job hunting, and in particular how much of the social welfare system helped or hindered?
Well, from my point of view, I've always worked. So I think in a lot of ways social welfare does hinder a lot of women getting out to work, because if they're dependent on the money that's coming in every week from the government, it's very hard to turn that up when you're looking at the cost of childcare, and when you're looking at when your children are sick, who are you going to get to mind them? Because that's one of the major struggles that I came across. As a single parent, I didn't have the support network from the other parents' family, whereas people that are married would have that support network of both families. So there has been times I've had to ring in and say I can't come to work because the children are sick. And that's even up to today, although they're that little bit older. So I do, I think social welfare, I think there could be a lot of things done to make it easier for women, especially in their situation, to get back out to work.
I'm working since my eldest was three. It was hard. I had to get childcare in the beginning because I had no support from a partner. The only support was my family, but I didn't want to put onto them. The way I looked at it, they're my kids, I'll look after them, it's my responsibility. But in the end, it did turn that I had to ask for family's help and support.
Would you see, though, poverty can be a consequence of single parenthood?
Yeah, it is a trap that a lot of single parents fall into, because you have the guilt of bringing your children up by yourself, and that's a huge hurdle to come across. You have the demands of two parents put on you because you're the only one there constantly 24/7. You have the wages of or the benefits of one person, and that has to be shared between maybe two, three, because I have three children. That was tough as they were growing up.
Yeah.
Definitely, yeah, very, very tough.
Why not have both adults paying?
That's something I've come across. I've been banging my head against the wall a lot of the time. Like, I do think that both parents should pay for their children. I think more has to be done to get the parents, the fathers in a lot of cases, to help put their children back to school, help with medical fees, help with any expenses, help with putting the food on the table.
And is that hard to achieve?
It's quite hard, yeah. I've been through the court systems trying to do that, and a lot of the time it's just monotonous going back and trying to do the same thing again.
Would it be nice to go on a holiday or take the children on holidays? I mean,
The last holiday I went on would have been 11 years ago, and I brought my two oldest boys to Crete, but I had to give up smoking to be able to do that. And when I did choose to give up smokes, it wasn't... I didn't choose to give them up, really. It was a fact. I had money in my pocket and I had enough money for 20 John Player Blue or bread and milk. And I chose the bread and milk for the kids and then decided, you know what, I'm going to put that few bob away that I'd been spending on the smokes. And I was able to bring the boys away on a family holiday. But that was then. Sure. Like now, I don't know where I got the money to smoke.
Two women under serious financial pressures are speaking to Paddy O'Gorman. Marion, let me begin with you. I mean, the statistics are frightening. 8% of the population, that's around 400,000 people, were living in consistent poverty in 2013, almost double the figures for 2008. But statistics are statistics on the ground. What are you seeing in West Hall and the area you work in?
I don't think I can articulate what that experience is any better than the two very brave women that we've just heard speaking about their experience of poverty. Certainly, the stress and the juggling that those two women have just articulated is something that we would see in our work in Tala, and that would be, you know, common across any disadvantaged area. So, the statistics and also the two women that we've just heard show that being lone parents, lone parent families are significantly more likely to experience poverty. It's important to say, Miriam, that just because you're poor doesn't mean you're not a good parent. That's for sure. It also doesn't mean just because you're poor or living in a disadvantaged community that your children inevitably won't achieve, because actually we know that lots of children are managing. But what it does mean is that people need help very often and some additional supports. So what are we seeing in Tala and what are my colleagues seeing in other communities? We're seeing people in a lot of debt, very often to informal arrangements, which are very costly. We're seeing the inevitable kind of pecking order stuff that kicks in. So when I'm in a bad place, I'll find someone who's in an even worse place. So, I mean, we've seen a lot of publicity recently about some of the intimidation. Certainly, we see a lot of racially motivated intimidation. The women touched on sort of schools. So we claim we have a free education system, but actually if you have to buy uniforms, school books, pay for school trips, never mind wanting your child to participate in after-school activities, whether that be GAA or drama, they're huge stresses that families are having to contend with.
And in terms of children, Marion, I mean, when you witness what you're witnessing, how badly are they being affected? I mean, there's stories about children going to school hungry and not having a coat and at the moment being freezing.
Yes, and they're real. They're very real. I speak to school principals who have children arriving that haven't had breakfast, that are hungry because what they had the previous evening was inadequate. We have disadvantaged communities in Ireland have very high levels of obesity, and that's because it's not because they're not eating. They're eating, but they're eating all the wrong stuff. So they go to the chipper instead of having a proper meal. And so we're actually creating, it's not just about the poverty, it's not just about the fact that if you're hungry in school, you can't concentrate and your behaviour is going to be impacted, but actually we're creating a whole load of health issues if we don't start intervening with all of this.
And listening there to Paddy speaking to those women, I mean, single parents, they find it particularly difficult to cope, I suppose, managing and living and minding their children on their own and also trying to find work.
Yes, yeah. And I think there's simply a psychological stress that comes from being solely responsible. So these women have all of the financial difficulties that come with lone parenthood, and that is very clearly articulated in all the statistics that we could look at. But also, they're trying to be the good cop and the bad cop. I mean, one of the mothers said something, you know, that every parent has to struggle with, which is about giving the children what they need but not what they want. And that's about being a good parent, but it's doubly, that's really hard when you have all the guilt because you can't always give them the things that they need as well as the things that they want.
Let me bring you in Cork, Brendan Dempsey. I mean, you've been a volunteer with Vincent de Paul for over 30 years. What are you seeing in Cork at the moment, Brendan?
Well, a big increase in poverty. There is an increase. People who live on social welfare aren't by any means the worst off, you know, if they're good at handling money, at budgeting, and if there's no drink or gambling involved, they really wouldn't be hungry, you know. Single parents are in a slightly different category. There are added pressures there, and we would have a huge amount of single parents looking for help. The real poverty really starts with people who are slightly above that threshold that allows them have a medical card or rent allowance. When they lose that, you really start to suffer, you know. Quite recently, we were dealing with a woman here in Cork who, well, we knew she was in hospital for an operation, and two of our members called on her as a courtesy call, really, how are you? She should have been out. They knocked on the door and the little girl said, "Mummy is sick." And they went in and Mummy was lying on the couch and she couldn't get up. And they called the doctor for her, and South Dock came, shifted her into hospital immediately. She was in a very, very serious condition. What had happened was she had been through hospital. Mm-hmm. They sent her home with a prescription. She had lost her medical card in last year's bit of a debacle over medical cards. So she wasn't able to fill her prescription. She bought the milk and the bread for the children. And our people actually went out and got the prescription for her. It was only €19, but she wasn't able to get it.
And Brendan, I know there's a story I read about you that you were witness to a situation where a mum told her teenage son about bread in the evening. Do you remember that story?
I do. We were in a house and there were teenage boys there, two teenage boys full of life. They were going out. It was around 6:30, 7 o'clock on a summer's evening, and they were heading out to kick the ball around the street and get rid of a bit of taspy, you know. And the mum called after them going out the door, "When you come in, don't touch the bread or the milk. We need them for breakfast tomorrow morning." Now, any young fellow kicking the ball around the street on a summer evening would come in and want a slice of bread going to bed, you know. But it wasn't there. It wasn't in the house.
So what a lot of people just take for granted, it just simply isn't there for very many people, Brendan.
That's right. And especially with single parents, that young lady that you were speaking to early on there touched on something that I have been writing about and cribbing about for a long time. And it's that dads are not obliged to support their children. They simply walk away from the problem and let them. And dads should support their children.
Okay, Brendan, stay with us. Eoin Reardon's here. In fact, we can hear about all the statistics in the world, Eoin, but when you hear Brendan speaking about that young boy going out to play football and Marion stories, how aware are you of real people living like this?
Oh, very aware. I mean, the reason I got involved in politics is because a teacher in the North Inner City in Dublin, and my absolute belief that education is the way out of poverty, is the way to break through intergenerational disadvantage. And when you look at statistics like 1 in 3 children in disadvantaged areas leave primary school with basic reading problems, that's going to have a long-term effect on their ability to break out of poverty. When you look at reports like the Hart and Rizzi report from 1995 that says that your average three-year-old from a welfare-dependent family, comparing that with your average three-year-old from a professional family, the three-year-old from a professional family has 3 times the oral language capacity than the welfare-dependent three-year-old. So even before they ever get anywhere near primary school, there's major problems and major gulfs in their potential to achieve their potential, if you like. So what CDI and Teller are doing and Young Ballymun are doing in Ballymun and Preparing for Life in Darndale, in my own constituency, are doing is empowering young mothers and empowering parents to break through that. And it does come back to issues like diet. It comes back to issues like oral language. It comes back to issues like aspiration.
But it also comes back out to trying to change fundamentally the society we live in. I noticed last week Michael D. Higgins was suggesting that the EU, you know, putting us up there as a poster boy or poster girl for how to get out of a recession, perhaps shouldn't be put up as a poster, because the statistics about child poverty are dire. I mean, The UNICEF report ranked Ireland 37th place in the league table, measuring relative changes in child poverty.
But even during the boom time, we had 150,000 people unemployed consistently, and we had areas of disadvantage that weren't able to break out of them. And the only way they found a way of finding empowerment was actually a parallel economy and getting involved in a parallel economy, you know, drug crime and all the rest of it. And so we have to create a space where, look, welfare is protects people, completely agree, and will defend, and we have defended as much as we possibly can the welfare system, but also the understanding that employment is the best way out, and employment and work that actually pays. I mean, if you think of the fact that, you know, we are supporting 50,000 working families through FIS, that's 280 million a year. They're people who should really be supported by their employer, and we shouldn't be having to supplement people's income in order to keep them out of poverty. Employers should be paying people a decent wage.
So what is the main government plan to deal with some of the issues we've just been hearing from Brendan and Marion? Living like this?
Yeah, some of them are area-based. So you have the area-based anti-child poverty strategy, which has been rolled out on the model of CDI in Talla, Preparing for Life in Darndale and Young Ballymun, and we're rolling them out to 13 different areas where agencies interact with each other. If I say it's the council, or I say to the public health nurse, or I say to different agencies that education should be part of your remit, they'll disagree.
Do they work, Marion, sitting beside him? Do they, those schemes work?
We have done some fantastic work, there's no question about it. The three organisations that the Minister's referred to have been very heavily researched, so we know what's working, we know what's not working, and we're now building on it. And we very much welcome the government initiative to roll that out to a number of other additional areas. There are some fundamental difficulties. So in some ways we're tinkering on the edges. So the level of evaluation and the level of research that we have been required to undertake to prove that what we're doing works is not applied to statutory mainstream services. So
explain that. What do you mean?
So do we know whether our primary school curriculum is the right one for our children? Do we know that what a public health nurse does is effective? Do we know that our primary care system is maximising the resources that it has? No, we don't, because we don't do any root and branch evaluation of statutory services. But we require the voluntary sector, which has a fragment of the resources. We require the voluntary sector to rigorously evaluate our work on an ongoing basis, provide regular data, which is all absolutely how it should be. But the same standards do not apply.
Aon?
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I mean, I think what we have done in the primary school sector, just going back to the statistics I quoted earlier about the literacy difficulties in primary schools, we have put within the primary and secondary system the new literacy and numeracy strategy that's trying to raise standards across the board. I suppose what we want to prove, I suppose, when we're trying to get long-term funding for CDI or for Young Ballymun or for Preparing for Life in Darndale, is that we can justify the money for a long-term sustainable basis. But the fruits of what is being done in Talla and Ballymun and Darndale and various different parts of the country will be seen in 5 years' time, when the attendance rates in schools can be seen to have been improved, when the statistical analysis of people's literacy standards can be...
But mind you, for 5 years, there are children who are very young who could be lost.
Absolutely. Mm. So obviously there's always an immediate response to child poverty, which is based on welfare and based on activation schemes, but sometimes you have to take a 5-10 year approach, and which will have a long-term impact on the child's
Brendan,
life.
Brendan, just to bring you back in, I know you started a new charity in Cork, BIA. You work with food wholesalers to redistribute food they would have otherwise dumped. That obviously seems like a very good idea. Does it work?
It certainly works. Up to Christmas, we had been 4.5 months in operation, and we had, at that time, we had already handled 180,000 meals. We had passed on 180,000 meals. We're getting, of course it works. Companies had been getting rid of food that they didn't need, surplus to requirement, and in silly ways. I mean, For example, we're getting 15 boxes of ham each month from a crowd called Carol's Cuisine up in Tullamore in County Offaly. They send it down to us. This is where they slice hams, the sliced ham that you buy for sandwiches in a shop.
Yeah.
And the first quarter inch and the last quarter inch of the ham can't be sliced. So what they're doing is they're now putting it into a bag for us. We're getting about 15 boxes a week, which is about 900 meals a week. Or I see the chefs here in Simon and in our own hostels in Vincent de Paul frying them. They fry them on a frying pan like a gammon steak and plate of chips and a fried egg and you have a meal, you know?
Yeah.
Kellogg's are giving us around 4,000 boxes of cereals a month on their buy a box, give a bowl campaign, you know? So, yes, and then you have wholesalers, producers, who, for one reason or another, let's say Tesco are very supportive of us and so on. But if Tesco order, let's say, 100,000 meals from somebody or 100,000 items, it seems that they build into the contract the facility to either add another 5,000 or drop 5,000 off it. If they drop 5,000 off it and it's been produced, it can't be sold. So we get it. Do you understand?
Yes, I do. And with Aeon here, is there anything very simple that they could do? Or is that just a naive thought that would improve the lot of the people you see on a daily basis, Brendan and Cork?
That who could do to improve it?
The government.
Well, of course. I mean, look, we're operating breakfast clubs in Cork. We're providing food to breakfast clubs. The breakfast clubs are not adequately funded by the state. They're not adequately funded. And like, even the, oh God, even the councils. I mean, I've seen over the last 30 years, Cork City Council has changed the face of Cork here. They've knocked tenements and built beautiful new purpose-built social housing. But they don't have enough funds for maintenance. And I know the state is in a hard way at the moment, but especially in our hostels, I would say that a very large proportion of the men really need hospitalisation. They really need to be looked after, and hostels can't look after them. I would tell you a story. There's a man living here in Cork in a tent for the last 4 years. He's been living in a tent. I go out and talk to him, bring him sandwiches, and while I'm talking to him, he's talking to the trees. He holds a conversation with the trees. And I know the Gardaí have brought him in and had him medically examined, but the medical examiners deemed him okay and they left him out again. Do you understand
me?
Yeah,
he's obviously very vulnerable,
Brendan.
That man
needs help. He won't come into the hostels for us. He needs help. There are lots of people who need help. And the state is closing down psychiatric wards. And the money, I don't know. I just don't know anymore, I swear.
Ain't no weird then, on the money, he even mentioned, say, the breakfast clubs.
Yeah, we actually have. I mean, it doesn't get much coverage, but we actually have put more millions into breakfast clubs than we ever have before. I think there's actually 2 million this year. And I was down in Edinburgh recently with Tánaiste for John Burton, and we were seeing the breakfast club in operation there. And yes, we have invested in that every year. But I suppose the point is that when do you move beyond, you know, social protection, I would describe as a cage. It protects the wolves from the door, but doesn't necessarily set you free. And if you move from welfare to work, then you're going to double your disposable income immediately. So it's how you get people into work through activation and ensuring that when they work, they get paid a proper and decent wage. And that's what we hope the whole Low Pay Commission will do.
Aeon, Marion and Brendan and Cork, thanks so much for chatting to us today.
Today with Sean O'Rourke on RTE Radio 1.